Hey, I'm Michaela Lafrac, co-host of Vermont Edition. I wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited down for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening and enjoy. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. Vermont has a shortage of affordable childcare. Wait lists are often dozens of names long. And even if your child gets in, can you afford it? When parents don't have access to good childcare, their employers and coworkers suffer too. Then there are the childcare workers themselves. That's the focus of today's show. According to a study out of Berkeley, the median wage for childcare workers in Vermont in 2019 was just $13.72 an hour. They often don't get health insurance or retirement benefits. Their hours are long and demanding, though many childcare workers say they're in the field because they love it. It's a calling. Today, we'll hear what it's like to be a childcare worker in Vermont, the highs and the lows. And we'll look at some ways that we could remake the field into a more sustainable career. Are you a former childcare worker? Why did you leave the field? What would have made you stay? Our phone lines are open. 800-639-2211 is the number to call. You can also email us at vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Later in the show, we're going to hear from a current child care center director in Stowe and a former director turned advocate in Burlington. But first, we want to get a sense of what a typical day is like for a child care worker. To do that, we're joined by Jesse Contrayer. He's a preschool teacher and assistant director at Robin's Nest Children's Center in Burlington. Welcome back to the show, Jesse.
Happy to be here.
So Robin's Nest is in Burlington's Old North End. Can you paint us a picture? Like, how many kids go there? What's the population like?
So we are, we're in the Old North End, Burlington, around the corner from the Sustainability Academy. We are in the basement of St. Joseph's Church. So we have a beautiful old, the school building, not the church, but we're in beautiful old brick building. We have about 36 families. We have 18 per day about in the preschool classroom.
Okay. Does that feel like relatively small or relatively large school compared to other ones?
I think we're kind of in the middle. I mean, there's some classes, schools that might have bigger classrooms. I think, there are limits to how many kids in a classroom. Our limit is 20 per day. So we could have more. 18 is a good number, for us in the space that we have.
Right. And you work in the preschool. How does the day start for you?
I'm a preschool teacher. Been here for, 13 years. I think for me, I get here around 7:30, set up tables, get the classroom ready for the kids to come. Our hours are 7:30 to 5:30. So we don't have a set time where kids have to show up, so kids start trickling in around 8 o'clock, 7:45. And, I have the classroom set up for them with activities at tables. Try to get a sensory activity, try to get, blocks and things that will entertain the kids for a little bit of free play in the morning.
And then what comes next? I'm guessing you have snack, you have a bunch of kids running around with some energy. Do you go outside?
Yeah, absolutely. So we do a lot of free play. We're a play-based center. We do a lot of free play. And once that morning free play is over, we have a morning meeting or a circle time that we call it, where we sing songs and kind of have a little classroom discussion about whatever is on the kids' minds, and we have a snack, and then we'll go play outside. In the summer, we'll be outside for the majority of the day, till nap time around 1 o'clock. And in the winter, we try to get at least an hour. Today was chilly, so we got about a half hour out there. The wind was kind of cold in our faces, but we try to get outside every day and spend as much time as possible. We're lucky; we have a pretty big, large space that used to be the cafeteria of the school building here. So if it's too cold or rainy or whatever, we go in there and we get to run around and play soccer and just have a good time and let the kids get their energy out.
And we appreciate you taking some time out of the middle of your workday too to come on this show. I know that's difficult. And what are your hours? What's a typical length of day for you?
So I work 7:30 to 4:30. I'm sorry. And oftentimes, I have a second job where I coach basketball, so I have to, oftentimes go to practice. So I kind of leave right at 4 o'clock, whether we have a game or practice. But, typically outside of the season, I'll stay later, you know, to make sure there's, you know, the proper number of staff to student ratio. And oftentimes, you know, there'll be too many kids for me to leave at 4 o'clock, or, you know, it's just helping the other staff get to a good place for me to leave. So, you know, 7:34 are my hours, but, you know, those are fluid.
Yeah. Now, Jesse, later in the show, we're going to be talking about ways to recruit and retain more childcare workers such as yourself. And having just described your day for us and all that it entails and the hours that you're there, what's something, I mean, you've been in this field for, you said, 13 years. What makes you stay?
I mean, kind of what you said in the opening is I love it. You know, my mom, who also kind of works at Let's Grow Kids, helped start Robin's Nest. So it's kind of just in the family. And I know I love it. I love working with this age. It's fun. To see the growth in the children from ages 3 to 5 is awesome. And it's a really fun job. It keeps me young. So I think you hit the nail on the head. I feel like people in this business just really love it. And you kind of have to love it, honestly.
Yeah. What makes you say that you kind of have to love it? Like, what are some of the challenges?
Well, I mean, pay is challenging. I think that is a huge part of it, you know, earning a living wage, especially in Burlington, where the cost of living, Chittenden County, Burlington area cost of living is high. And, you know, it is stressful. It is a hard job. You know, there's oftentimes it seems not enough resources. And, you know, it's a job that takes a lot out of you at times. And with a job like that, if you're not necessarily getting the pay or the support, you know, then you do it because you love it.
Yeah. Yeah. And Jesse, would you be comfortable sharing like what your salary or salary range is or any benefits that you receive?
Yeah.
How are you compensated for this work?
Yeah. So, Like I said, I've been working here 13 years. So I make now at this point as assistant director and preschool teacher around $40,000 a year. We're lucky at Robin's Nest. We do have health insurance and dental insurance. So that is a part of what, you know, our earning. That's a huge part of it. And I know a lot of places can't afford to give their staff that as well. So that is a big part of it. That's not something that I think we take for granted here at Robin's Nest.
Yeah, yeah. And when it comes to recruiting new teachers, since you've been there for over a decade, I'm sure you've worked with many people who have come and gone. What do you hear from fellow childcare workers who decide to leave Robin's Nest? Do they tell you why?
Yes, you know, some do, some don't. I think a lot of situations are there. Oftentimes we do have people who might be licensed teachers who go to the public school where they can earn more and have a, you know, a different schedule. We are open year round. We don't close in the summer. So you have a, you know, potentially a different schedule. You earn quite a bit more money, you know, just starting off. So that's part of it. We have college students who, you know, go to UVM and work here and, you know, graduate and move on. And then there's people who do this as a profession and, you know, it can't sustain it and, you know, need to earn more money and work, you know, one or two jobs and then eventually just kind of move on because it's just not, you know, they're not earning enough to, you know, live essentially.
Right. Now, Jesse, I hear you have recently become a parent yourself. I'm curious what it's like to be on the other side and, not just being a, childcare professional, but also someone who might be looking for childcare for your own family.
Yeah, you know, it's a lot less sleep. that just comes with the job. But no, it's great. I think we are lucky enough for my wife and our child to come to Robin's Nest. And, you know, so that part is great. Having him at work with me has been great. I think the schedule fits us. But, you know, it is a pretty big added cost for our family, and you know, the monthly bill is something that I wasn't used to paying. I think I understood we charged families, but I guess I understand it a little bit better now.
Mm. Yeah. So having this new understanding. What do you think, as somebody on the front lines of this work, what do you think the child care centers need to do or need in terms of support in order to make this equation work better, not just for families, but for workers?
Yeah, well, it's a business, you know, like we have to charge our families to pay the staff. And, you know, I think people understand that. I just think the cost is so high on families. And that doesn't, you know, kind of, we as child care workers we know that. It's a huge cost on families. And especially coming out of the pandemic where, you know, a lot of centers, including ours, still charge families a little bit, you know, still were able to charge families. And, you know, it's tough. I don't know. I'm not sure we could use help. I think what's being talked about in the state is going to be huge for families. I think having some financial help, Act 166 help preschool families for partnering districts to cover a little bit of the cost during the school year. But, you know, it's not a huge amount. And I don't know. I think it's help. Financial help is the biggest piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Jesse, before we let you go, I wondered if you might be able to share a recent moment from a work day for you that kind of illustrates why you stay in this work. I mean, we hear so much about the challenges that face childcare centers and workers and parents. What's a moment that brought you joy recently?
Well, I feel like throughout the day, there's so much throughout the week and the month and all that. There's so much that I enjoy. I can think we have, you know, here at Robinson's, we have one little kiddo that is not English speaking. He's, you know, he's learning English. He's 3 years old. And, you know, having him kind of speak to us the other day was great. But also he's just like a funny kid. We were going to nap the other day, and instead of walking, he decided to, you know, on his hands and legs or hands and feet, kind of crawl down the hallway carrying his nap box. And just honestly watching him go down the hallway to nap doing that was the highlight of my day. It was hilarious. I just started laughing, honestly, and couldn't really stop at watching him go down the hall and trying to balance his nap box on his back. So things like that, the little things are the highlights of the day for me. I think just spending time with the kids and having a good time and Legos or art projects or whatever it might be.
Well, Jesse Contreyer, assistant director and preschool teacher at Robin's Nest Children's Center in Burlington, thank you so much for taking time out of what I'm sure is a very busy day to talk with us.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad to do it.
All right, we're going to take a quick break here, but up next, we'll be joined by two child care center directors who will share their take on the worker shortage. And if you've worked in child care or you're a parent with experiences to share it yourself, give us a call, 800-639-2211. Or if you have ideas on how to fix Vermont's child care crisis, again, that number is 800-639-2211, and we'd love to hear from you. I'm Michaela LaFrac, and this is Vermont Edition. Stay with us.
The 2023 legislative session in Montpelier is busy, and the choices made by lawmakers affect us all.
When we invest really deeply in our communities and when we spend in our communities,
nuances matter, and that's where all decisions are kind of made.
Get a better understanding of the week's events and how they impact you during the Capitol Recap, Fridays during All Things Considered, and Saturdays on Weekend Edition. Find more of our legislative coverage at vermontpublic.org.
Thanks for listening to Vermont Public this Tuesday afternoon, where we're supported today by the Nitty Gritty Grain Company, a family farm offering locally grown organic flour and cornmeal, available at grocers and co-ops, nittygrittygrain.com. And by the Northfield Savings Bank, locally owned and offering a range of financial tools to help Vermont businesses grow. Information at nsbvt.com.
Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela LaFrac. Today on the show, there is a shortage of childcare workers in Vermont. What is it like to be a childcare worker here? And what is behind the shortage? Vermont's House and Senate are expected to introduce major pieces of legislation as soon as this week that address the early childcare crisis. And worker recruitment and retention are bound to be a key element of those bills. Today, we're speaking with childcare professionals and center directors and advocates specifically about childcare workers. If your child's enrolled in early childhood education, what's been your experience with your children's teachers? As a parent, what role do childcare workers play in your life? Give us a call and share your stories, 800-639-2211. You can also tweet us at Vermont Edition or send an email to vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Our next guest is Sonia Raymond, the owner of Apple Tree Learning in Stowe, here to share her experiences running a childcare center. Sonia, welcome.
Thank you very much.
We're also joined for the rest of this hour by Sherry Carlson, the Chief Programs Officer at Let's Grow Kids, which is a statewide advocacy group for childcare in Vermont. Sherry spent more than two decades as the director of the Greater Burlington YMCA Early Childhood and Families Program before joining Let's Grow Kids. Sherry, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So, Sonia, with Apple Tree Learning, I'd love to start with you here. Now, you owned a childcare center in Stowe. What made you decide to get into this field?
Well, I was a public education teacher, a special educator, specifically for 14 years in public education. And my brother and sister-in-law actually opened a program here in Stowe because there was no center-based care at all at the time that they had their son. And so they approached me knowing that I was feeling a bit frustrated as a special educator in the constraints that are on that system at the time, and asked if I wanted to buy in. They were looking for somebody to be an owner and a director at that point. So I did. I've been very happy that I've done it ever since.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's come with its own challenges as well, too, which we'll get into in just a moment. But first, could you share a little bit about what your typical day is like as a director? We just heard from a person who works in a preschool classroom, but as a director, it might be a little bit different. I imagine you're both doing some classroom work and also a lot of management, right?
Yes, exactly. So, you know, your day can really begin at about 5:36 in the morning, where you may be fielding staff who are out or have emergencies or things are happening. So you're scrambling to kind of pull your day together a little bit. And, you know, once you arrive, you're, you know, immediately greeting parents and teachers, and, you know, if you have meetings or things like that, you're sort of organizing your day initially. But throughout the day, it really is a combination of some in-class time, which honestly is some of my best moments of the day, with children. And, you know, because you might be filling in, I honestly probably fill in on the average about an hour a day in each class, you know, various classrooms. And then it's a lot of administration work, funding pieces, billing. We do every aspect of our business. The only thing we actually farm out are our taxes and payroll. And a lot of meetings with teachers, a lot of work around curriculum. So there's a lot of pieces involved. It's a wide variety of work throughout the day.
And Sherry Carlson, I want to get to your advocacy work in just a moment, but first, you spent many years as the director of the Burlington Wise Childhood Childcare Program. Did your day mirror what Sonia was just describing?
Yes, all of that sounds very familiar. During my time at the Greater Burlington YMCA, I oversaw eight early childhood education programs, all at eight different sites, serving 500 children birth to five. And it was really a mix of programs. There were three employer-sponsored programs. As well as programs located in our physical facilities. And all of what Sonia describes sounds very familiar.
Let's start with Mary Beth in Burlington. Mary Beth, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, I just heard Jesse speak and I couldn't resist calling to just do a shout out because I now have a 13 and a 16-year-old, both of whom had Jesse back in preschool. And he was young and energetic, and I'm just so excited that they had a young Black man at such a formative time in their life because I think it's made all the difference in their education experience.
Ah, that's wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing that. And hopefully Jesse's still listening and heard your shout out. If not, we'll send it to him later. Let's go next to Ted in Lake Placid. Ted, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi there. Yes, I'm actually on the road, although I pulled over. But I actually started two different preschools in California, one in Sherman Oaks, which actually is still ongoing, and the other was in Goleta. And this was back in the 70s, so long before many laws were in place. The school in Sherman Oaks, California, that's called the Nursery, originally was started by my friends and I, and it was a predominantly male staff preschool in an area that was full of single parents. And it was very successful. Hmm. And the other one was called Mainstay. And before the laws actually changed in California, it was a preschool for able and disabled children so that they worked and played together, had a lot of fun.
Oh, wow. Well, thanks for calling in, Ted, and sharing those stories. And I'm guessing that as Ted mentioned, the laws and regulations around running childcare centers have changed a lot in the decades since the 70s. Sherry, I'm wondering if you could weigh in here. What are some of the many regulations that childcare centers have to abide by in order to stay open these days?
Oh, yeah, thanks for the question. I think, a key to what you said is things have changed since the 70s, and certainly we would be worried if things hadn't changed since the 70s, particularly if we think about things that may have been in our own life in the 70s. So before 2015, when the licensing regulations for family child care and center-based child care changed, they had not been changed for over 20 years. And so the types of things that were updated was based on things that we had learned in the past 20 years that was best for children's safety and their development. So what was changed were things primarily around like how to care for children in a healthy way, what might be levels of preparation that individuals working with children should have, such as CPR, first aid, a minimum of 120 hours of training on child development, how to give medicine. I think we all would agree that we want to ensure at the foundation our children are safe and well cared for.
And Sonia, in your day-to-day work at Appletree Learning in Stowe, how do you view some of these many regulations that Sherry just mentioned? Do you see them as a way to effectively, take care of children in a safe way, or potentially as barriers to being able to running a business?
Well, overall, I see them as a benefit. There really are a lot of regulations around the health and safety of children that are very important. And then I think also the piece around qualifications of your staff, in my opinion, is probably one of the most important changes that's taken place and continues to change and evolve. Because it really is the quality of your staff and the teachers that work for you that ensure that the health and safety and development of children happens, in a good way. I would say there have been moments of frustration where I felt like I was at the height of insanity trying to maneuver around all of the regulations. But I have to say that the Child Development Division has been really good about figuring out how to help programs find a way that makes sense logistically for their building, you know, for their staffing, et cetera, to make things work and continue to uphold the safety standards.
Mm. Well, let's get in a bit more deeply to this issue that Vermont and many other states across the country have with both recruiting and retaining childcare workers. Let's start with that recruitment piece, because I know Vermont's done a lot in the past couple of years to work with, kind of widen that pipeline of childcare workers in the state. Sherry, could you speak to us a bit about that? What are some of the ways that you have seen Vermont's government try to help recruit and train childcare workers?
I think one of the positive ways that Vermont has tried to recruit and retain early childhood educators is, number one, there's been investment in preparation programs. A lot of that was made possible through the recovery funds from COVID. And so you essentially can, you know, get an associate's degree in early childhood education, or, you know, a certificate program or another program that kind of supports your early childhood education career goals almost for free right now with the investments that have been made. And that's been very positive. And you know, we've seen growth in some of those programs. There's also been, there was a bonus and retention bonus programs that the state of Vermont has allocated on a few occasions that have also been helpful.
Hmm. So there's this ability for people in Vermont to get a degree in early childcare essentially for free. But, you know, anecdotally, I've heard of folks, you know, getting that degree, working for a couple of years, and then leaving for another another location, but really another industry, more than likely. Sherry, what do you think the issues are there with retention? If we are, you know, effectively widening the pipeline, how do we get folks to stay?
It really comes down to compensation. You know, until we can fairly compensate early childhood educators for the important role they play, we aren't going to be able to retain the workforce. We recently partnered with UVM and Dr. Katie Northey on a study that looked at the preparation pathways. And part of that was getting information from those in the pipeline, like their likelihood of working with 0 to 5. And there was a great deal of skepticism. Though there was desire, there was skepticism whether or not that would be a career that they could follow based on what they know about the levels of compensation.
Hmm. Oh, a recent article in 7 Days looked at a specific childcare center in Montpelier, Turtle Island, and the journalist Allison Novak reported that staff, some with master's degrees, were earning between $14.50 and $21 an hour. A number of them were eligible for food stamps at that salary. And we also received an email from a listener who asked to stay anonymous, who said that they work at what's considered an elite childcare center in central Vermont. And they said that they have a college degree and left a well-paid job because they love working with young children, but now I'm on Medicaid and need government assistance. I love my job, but friends and family think it's irrational for me to continue working there when I could be earning a livable wage and saving for retirement. I'm starting to think so too. Sonia Raymond with AppleTree Learning in Stowe, how do you tackle this issue of worker pay? Have you struggled to retain people because of the salaries that you're able to swing?
Yeah, we definitely have over the years. Although I would say I feel pretty lucky that we have a better retention rate, I think, than the average for sure. You know, we have spent a lot of time working on compensation, which includes benefits for our staff. You know, we 15 years ago had a series of parent board meetings where we discussed how to address this, because we were losing staff. When I first bought into this business, we lost staff a lot to the very same. I mean, this has been going on for decades. And at the same time, continue to work on quality of programming. So we're currently an NAEYC accredited in a 5-star program, and that's super important to us. And it's also important to us that, like I mentioned before, that we have the quality of staff necessary to ensure safety and proper potential growth for every student developmentally here in our program. And it was clear that there was a commitment to figuring this out. And it has taken us 15 years to get to the point, last year being the last piece to put in a place of offering benefits for my staff. We had meetings, numerous meetings with our staff about what would help you remain in the field. I mean, everyone understands currently we're probably 15 to 20,000 less as an equally qualified public school teacher for my teachers that have bachelor's and licenses.
So just to reiterate that for listeners, the teachers at early childhood education center already around $15,000 to $20,000 less than they would be if they were in the public school system.
That's accurate. And so we have worked very hard initially on increasing compensation incrementally over a 5-year period. We worked very hard on that. And then we started bringing in benefits about 10 years ago, starting with like short-term disability. We had lots of people who worked for us that were of childbearing years, and the short-term disability helped them be able to have some semblance of a maternity leave, life insurance, those kinds of things. About 5 years ago, we were finally able to bring in healthcare benefits, with medical, dental, and vision. And then last year, finally, some retirement, which is huge for folks.
So how did you do it? 5 years. How did you do it? What's the secret sauce?
Well, I don't know that there is a secret sauce. It was really, again, we took advantage over the last 5 years of every single grant that has been available, literally, through the state. And they have really been working, especially through COVID, around the issue of compensation. And we've taken advantage of that to help us bring our teachers' salaries to a better place. And also to help us institute these changes with benefits. It is hard to maintain. You know, you do get to a point and a saturation point where the market, you know, your customer can only bear so much. And this is the place that everybody's reached, right, with their customers. And this is what they're talking about. And this is why we need public investment in order to work on some, you know, on this issue.
We're going to have to take a quick break in just a moment, but when we come back from that, I want to be sure that we dive into this conversation around public investment and what could be coming down the pike this year. First, let's go to the phone. So we have a call from Jennifer in Manchester. Jennifer, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Jennifer Ludi. I am the development director at Northshire Day School in Manchester, where we have 89 children enrolled. And I'm in a unique position because I am both a parent of a child enrolled. I had a child attend who is now in kindergarten. And I'm responsible for fundraising for this program because we are a nonprofit and we operate at a significant deficit. So I am very tuned in and I really have my eyes on what's going on because we really do need an ongoing financial commitment at this time. We did so well when we had COVID funding and PPP loans, and we worked so hard to get grants. But at the end of the day, it's not going to be sustainable. It's not going to be something we can continue to do. And we operate at a really significant deficit in order to be able to do what's best for our families and stay open really long hours. We're open 10 hours a day. We're open year-round. And to get quality educators to do that, you have to compensate them properly, and we're very much committed to doing so.
Well, if you're working at a deficit, Jennifer, I'm wondering if there's a point where the money runs out. Is there any chance that your center might close?
We are working really, really hard to make sure that that doesn't happen. And that's really my role here at the school, to make sure that, you know, we're able to make payroll and that we're able to offer families what's best for them. and that we're able to recruit and retain the educators. So right now we're in kind of this holding pattern, waiting to see what happens, and it's stressful because you know, we really don't know where people are going to come down when the bill comes out.
Well, Jennifer, thanks so much for your call, and best of luck with that work. Let's go next to Donna in Bristol. Donna, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for having me. My name's Donna Bailey, and I'm a director of the Addison County Parent Child Center in Middle. That covers all of Addison County, and I live in Bristol. And I just wanted to weigh in because I think thank you for having the show and for talking about it. And I think Sonia just mentioned public investment, and for me, that is the critical piece here. We are providing education and care for young children. You know, I think Thomas Jefferson helped us decide about public education long ago, and I think while this also involves care, it's really important to realize that today's day and age, we need public investment. And I also feel like part of this conversation seems to be focusing on childcare as a business. And, you know, while I have to wear that, you know, business hat, I don't think that's what childcare is. It's education and care of young children and working with their families. And so what we need is the public investment and the realization that, you know, mostly women can't go to work unless their children are in high quality care that they trust. And, you know, the way to do that is to make sure that we have the spaces and the funding so that all of us aren't running around every day trying to make sure we're not going to have to close our doors. And I really appreciate the state has moved forward in funding and has helped with professional development and training, but there's still a long way to go.
Donna, thanks so much for your call. Now, Sherry, before the break, we were touching on the fact that this could be a big year in terms of the state putting some major money towards making childcare more affordable and a more sustainable career for workers. Can you talk us through a little bit about what we could be expecting in the coming weeks and months from the legislature?
Sure. I think I first want to comment on the caller from Manchester and Donna and what Sonia shared earlier. What I heard each of them say is they are spending a lot of time trying to find money to keep their programs open and to be able to serve children and pay staff. So and we all know when you're writing grants, when you're trying to fundraise, that isn't a long-term systemic solution, and it doesn't provide equitable access to all Vermont children who wish to experience childcare and early childhood education. So I think we always get applauded at this, like how amazing we are as early childhood educators. We're heroic, we're this, because we're figuring out how in pockets of places to stay open another day. And what is really needed is systematic investment. And we need to fix the system. I think one of the things right now, I have never been more hopeful and afraid at the same time for the childcare system. And I think what we see right now is a pathway forward for public investment in childcare. And there are a couple things, you know, when we think about the policy and the investment needed. First of all, we haven't talked very much about families, many who are paying more than 30% of their income on childcare. So what we really need is both. We need an investment that will lift the compensation for early childhood educators and make childcare affordable for Vermont families. And I think we're in a great place right now. There's a pathway forward. We have a governor who identified funds in his budget address that can jumpstart this investment needed. We have a childcare financing report that really shows us what it would cost and some ideas of a path forward. And that's what we're anticipating we will be discussing in the coming months.
Well, yes, let's dive a bit more into what you just mentioned about Governor Scott, because a week and a half ago, he introduced his budget for the coming year, and it included around $56 million in annual funding, in large part for childcare subsidies for families, as you mentioned. But he also said that he didn't want to raise taxes to support new spending on childcare. So, Sherry, from your perch, do you think there's a way to meaningfully address the childcare crisis without raising taxes?
You know, I think we need to lean on the RAND report that was commissioned by JFO and looking at that. I think you're right. What Governor Scott's plan does is provide investment to support families. But if we don't invest in the early childhood education workforce, there will not be spaces available for families. I regularly get emails and calls from early childhood educators. My role with Let's Grow Kids is to work with the field, and I do that with a team of people. And I get multiple choice emails that say, should I close or try to find an owner? Do you think we're going to get the investment so I should stay open? Or maybe I should just reduce the number of spaces I have in my program and try to make it work. I feel at times that the childcare crisis borders on childcare collapse. This investment that we're talking about is really essential.
And just to note, the report from the RAND Corporation that you mentioned, that came out in mid-January, and it showed that Vermont will have to spend an additional $179 million to $279 million annually in order to pay childcare providers a livable wage and to ensure that families aren't spending more than 10% of their annual income on childcare expenses. We just received an email from a listener named Allison in Colchester who writes, early childhood education is critical to the success of the Vermont economy. Families who live here now are struggling. The state is often trying to attract young families to come and work here. Vermont's a great place to raise a family, but it's impossible to raise a family if families don't have basic support in place like early childhood education. Speaking of some of the financial difficulties of living in Vermont these days, a major issue that people face in many different industries is housing. And Sonia, with AppleTree Learning in Stowe, I'm curious if you feel like housing has a role to play in recruiting and retaining childcare workers.
Oh, it absolutely does. You know, I've actually had to hire recently a couple new folks. And for both of them, they were actually coming from out of state and moving to this state, which is excellent because they're young and just the kind of folks we're hoping to continue to keep and attract into this state. However, both of them were over a month and a half before they could even think about beginning their job because they weren't able to find housing. So one of them is still living with a cousin here, and the other one finally found an apartment like 2 weeks ago, so she was able to start. But there's definitely a correlation.
Right. And Sonia, Sherry brought up just a moment ago, and a caller as well, Donna, brought up this idea about talking about childcare as a business and how maybe that's not the best way to approach it. Now, as the owner of a childcare center yourself, what do you think of that? Do you think of it as a business, or should we be thinking about this conversation in a completely different way?
Well, I do think of it as a business. You know, we are in the business of providing a public service in that we are, you know, early educators. And I think, you know, running things like this as a business, you know, you are always aware of the bottom line. You are keeping things lean, but strategically deciding how to move forward and spending the precious dollars you have in the most meaningful way. I can't actually imagine not looking at it a little bit like a business. That doesn't mean it doesn't require public investment. You know, I think our public education system is a business, right? It's just publicly funded.
Right. And Sherry, since we were just talking about that study from the RAND Corporation saying that Vermont will have to pay or spend an additional $179 to $279 million a year to really meaningfully address this crisis. What's your hard sell to listeners, particularly maybe ones who don't have kids and are saying, hey, that sounds like a really big tax bill, and I'm already really struggling over here. What do you say to folks feeling that way right now?
Yeah, completely understand. I just, a couple things. First of all, it's been a chronically underfunded system. And yes, it takes a lot of dollars to fix something that has been chronically underfunded for decades. So that's number one. Number two, without childcare, there's so many things that fall apart, including housing. If you don't have childcare so that you can work, you might not be able to continue to, you know, pay for your housing. And I think the final thing that I would add is that, you know, this is a long-term investment. I was listening to another podcast from another state, and I heard a young person say, one thing they don't realize is that employers are not going to be able to hire the children we can't afford to have. And so this really is long-term. There are young people making decisions not to have children because they can't afford childcare. And so it just really is at the foundation of what we hope Vermont will be, a thriving state where people of, you know, all ages, backgrounds, race, ethnic backgrounds have come here to live and have access to the childcare services to support their families.
And we have just about a minute left here, but Sherry, before we let you go, what's one thing that you'd like people to know about the childcare workers that you've worked closely with, both at the Y in Burlington when you were director there and then in your advocacy work?
I think what I would like to do in my last minute is to also recognize family childcare homes. We haven't talked a lot about them, but the investment, impacts them as well. Many of them do have staff that work with them, and they also have expenses. They have to have a home to be able to be a family childcare home, and things like insurance and other expenses have elevated quite a bit for them as well. So I think, you know, really they are essential workers. I want to say is that 30% of them never closed during the pandemic, and 70% stayed open.
Sherry, I'm going to have to jump in here because I want to make sure that we give Sonia a last word as well. And Sonia, maybe I can pose that same question to you. What's something that you would like to share with listeners about the childcare workers that you work with day in and day out?
Well, they are the heart, soul, and blood of this business. They make or break the quality of this program. And whether or not, as was mentioned, people feel comfortable having their children come and trust that they are in good hands, therefore they are able to go to work. I just think without a public investment at this point, we do have a system in absolute crisis, and we're going to start to watch them go away one by one, as we have over the last few years.
Sonia Raymond and Sherry Carlson, thank you so much for your time today. I'm sorry we're going to have to cut this conversation off now. We're out of time, but we hope to return to this topic soon.